Want to do up and running first?
Yeah.
How's that sounding?
Welcome to Interlochen Public Radio's Studio A, featuring intimate performances and conversations in IPR's renowned production studio with some of the world's finest musical artists. Join us next for a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the lives of these extraordinary performers.
Hello, this is your pal and Interlochen Arts Academy alum, Michael Thurber. And I always love coming to the Interlochen campus. It's one of the most beautiful, magical places that you get a privilege to visit as an artist. But today is particularly special because by coincidence, one of my dear friends and one of my favorite musicians and favorite pianists happens to be on campus performing. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here in the studio with Chris Bowers. So for those of the people that are listening out there that maybe aren't familiar with your music yet or have heard about you, but this is sort of their entrance, Chris Bowers 101.
Yes.
I want to sort of set the stage a little bit for them. So you and I have known each other personally for about 10 years now. We met at Juilliard.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, what happened prior to Juilliard, and then we'll get into post Juilliard after that.
Yeah. I grew up in LA, and I went to an arts high school out there, actually called LA County High School for the Arts. It's like a lesser version than Interlochen, but like kind of the same thing. Actually, no, I think it's awesome. But yeah, it actually was really amazing because it really prepared me for the rigor of Juilliard. Like you know, I started piano when I was maybe about 6 or something like that. And my parents, they're not musicians, but they saw it fit and important that I play music for some reason. Even before I was born, they decided they wanted me to play piano, which is pretty funny. So they put me in lessons, and they did a really excellent job for not being musicians of finding these incredible institutions in LA, like LOXA, my high school, or like Colburn, which is another great school out in LA. And so, yeah, I studied there from like until 6 until the end of high school at Colburn. And so by the time I got to Juilliard, I was really very prepared for, again, like the demand and the high intensity of it. You know, like the idea of learning X amount of jazz standards in a week was normal to me because that's what I did at my high school. And so therefore, it really, I wasn't too overwhelmed when I first got to Juilliard, which was really great in that setting.
And were you writing music at that time too, or was it mostly piano focused?
I was not as seriously. I mean, I always wanted to actually be a film composer. Like even when I was maybe 10 or something like that, I was already talking about that being a goal of mine. So I would write things every now and then, but they were mostly like in the jazz standard context. Like I was kind of, that was like my main lens that I was composing through. And so that was pretty much it. I mean, I tried to score a short film when I was like a senior in high school that some director asked me to do, and I had no idea what I was doing. And I told her, yeah, I can definitely do it. Yeah, I can totally do it. And I remember just sitting there with the tape, which was on VHS, and I put it in my VCR and I like watched it. And I was like, what do I do now? Like, I have no idea what to do. And so, yeah, obviously I did not get that gig.
but hey, the heart was there.
Yeah, the heart was there. Yeah.
You know, before you made the transition fully into film, which we'll talk about, you know, you won the Thelonious Monk competition, and that was still when you were at Juilliard or before your master's or after Juilliard or?
Yeah, it was actually the beginning of my second year of my master's. So okay. I kind of went straight through. I did my undergrad and then went straight through to master's. And yeah, I won it in 2011, and I finished school in 2012. So it kind of really helped that transition actually out of school. Like I really feel like had I not won that, there are a lot of opportunities that I had right out of school or even right before I finished school that kind of came from that. Like I toured with Marcus Miller because he heard about me through the competition, and obviously I had to make an album, so that really kind of catapulted that side of my career. And so, yeah, I owe a lot to that competition and it kind of helping me not be homeless after school.
Right.
Yeah.
And you played with Jose James for a while during that time as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of started things right before. Like it was really very crazy how it all happened at the same time. Like right before I played I won the competition, I started playing with Jose James. I started playing with Q-Tip. I'd like recorded with like Kanye and people like that. And all that was happening literally the months before I won the competition. So that kind of created this, you know, somewhat perfect storm for things to continue to be successful after that.
So you're there, you're in your mid-20s, you have a huge competition win under your belt. For those of you at home that don't know the Thelonious Monk competition, it's the most prestigious competition in the jazz world, and it's hosted and judged by people like Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter, and it's a huge rite of passage to even participate in it, let alone win it. So there you are, you've won this competition, you're playing with people in the hip-hop world, in the pop world, you're also playing with serious jazz musicians, mm-hmm. and you have an opportunity to make your own record. How does all of that come together into your music, or does it? Or, you know, what's that all about? Because yeah. that's amazing. I mean, not a lot of people can do that much different type of work.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, something that you and I always talk about, like the idea of trying to be always honest to who you are musically, you know, your musical identity. I really feel like I really spent a lot of time when I was thinking about what to do for this first album, making sure that it was going to be all original compositions. It was going to feature all musicians and artists in my peer group. I didn't want to, you know, I think a lot of people take that opportunity and they create a traditional jazz album, which, like, you know, that's great as well, but that's not something that I wanted to do. And so, yeah, I wanted to make sure that the music that I wrote was representative of all of these different styles that I grew up listening to, that I continue to play to that day, because I felt like that would be more honest than trying to do a traditional jazz album, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you guys that haven't checked it out, the record is called Heroes and Misfits. Mm-hmm. And it really honestly is an unbelievable display of your different sides and your canon of sort of where you're at right now. And it's amazing that you can pull that many different influences together and still have it be so cohesive. And I guess the center of that, it's this authenticity that you're saying. Coming out of this record, and I guess during sort of while you were making this record, and back even further, as you're saying, to when you were in high school, you had this interest in film music.
Yeah.
That has really sort of taken off for you, and you've been scoring documentaries on Showtime. You did the Kobe Bryant one. You've done a bunch of other sports stars. You just did another documentary that's in theaters right now.
Yeah,
right?
About Norman Lear. Yeah,
about Norman producer. Lear.
Yeah.
So how did that come about, and also, two-part question, how did it come about, and how do you sort of keep all of these irons in the fire, and do they relate to each other? Are they separate? So
yeah, I think they relate to each other. It's definitely hard to keep it all balanced, for sure, but it started because I actually had a manager for a few months that was a friend of a woman who was directing a documentary about Elaine Stritch, the Broadway actress, and she happened to kind of recommend me for it, and so I scored that one, and from that director knew was producing another documentary, and so I scored that one, and the Kobe Bryant thing actually kind of came because a friend of mine from high school, or like a high school jazz band, was producing it actually, and just randomly came up to me one day at a show and was like, hey, do you want to do this documentary about Kobe Bryant? And I was like, yeah, sure, ha ha, that's funny. And then a month later, he was like, yeah, so this is really happening if you really want to do it. And which is, you know, amazing for me being from LA and like such a huge Laker fan and Kobe fan. And that film also really allowed me to have, they gave me the space to really write whatever I wanted. And so I really felt like that one helped me find a voice as a film composer, or at least an early voice. And a lot of the other work that I've gotten recently has been because of that. Yeah, so it's been really great. But now I'm trying to figure out, again, how to create that balance or strike that balance. And I'm working on my next album, but I'm making a film for it, essentially, where I didn't want to abandon that idea of storytelling that I think is really powerful with film scoring. And so I came up with the concept of creating a short film that's mostly silent. There's maybe like a handful of lines of dialogue. And the score that I write for it will then serve as part of my album, along with tracks that are inspired by the process or by the film and the story. So yeah, that's what I'm working on now.
Yeah, no big deal. You're sitting around twiddling your thumbs. Man, and I swear we're going to get to you playing, but this is really interesting because you're saying that, you know, all of your music background and everything that you like about just music standalone, and then everything that you like about film and everything that you like about the narrative that comes with film is now actually sort of cycling back and influencing what you're putting out as records as well.
Yeah, because I think even when I write, even when I play, and, you know, I think all of my favorite musicians, both friends and idols, do this, like, you know, it's all about storytelling. It's all about trying to, like, tap into a story or an idea or an emotion. And I feel like as jazz musicians, sometimes, especially when you come through the conservatory, you can really lose that because you really focus on technique and vocabulary and all these things that are very impressive, but they don't really make people feel anything. And I think that's why I got really connected to film scoring in the first place, because that's your job, is to translate emotion into sound. And that's really, you know, most it's subjective a lot of the time, but sometimes there are sounds that literally elicit certain emotions or certain feelings. And that's really incredible to tap into and to work on. And so I think all of those things I've really started to try to implement even more so in my own music, so that I know that, like, you know, these certain sounds were really tried to evoke this idea, this world, you know, which has been a lot of fun to mess with.
Ladies and gentlemen out there, we're talking with Chris Bowers here at the Interlaken Center for the Arts. Would you mind playing something for us now?
Yeah,
we want to hear your magic, my brother.
Oh man, definitely. It's funny, all this talk about like modern music and all that, I think I'm going to actually play a blues. It never gets better than that.
All right, take it away. This is Chris Bowers. Thank you.
You've been listening to Studio A. Today's program was engineered by Michael Culler. Meg Gruitz was our producer. This is Interlochen Public Radio.